Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm Sam Adams, the CEO of Vert Asset Management, and I'm here to talk about sustainable investing. This is the second of a three-part introductory series on sustainable investing. In the first, I covered the what of sustainable investing. What is it? What are the different types of it? And what are the performance expectations for each type? In this second part today, I'll discuss the why. Why do investors want to invest this way? And why do financial advisors and other intermediaries want to help them invest this way? Then in the third part, I'll discuss the how. How do you actually construct the investment portfolios for sustainability? How do you talk about it with clients? And how might you try to grow your business with this additional service? Okay, so let's get started on the why. People are complicated animals and they have lots of different motivations for doing things, and sustainable investing is no different. Something as simple as buying organic groceries at the store might be done for entirely different reasons for one person or another. For example, when my wife buys organic food, she does it largely because she thinks it's safer and healthier for our bodies and for our children. I believe that, but my motivation is much more about sending a signal to the grocery store and then to the food industry behind that grocery store that I want more organic food, a more sustainable agricultural system. Or if she's concerned about personal health and that's her motivation, I'm more concerned about sending a signal with my vote for organic food. And so the outcome is the same, buying more organic food, but the motivations may be different. This is very similar to sustainable investing. We might not be able to completely identify all of the motivations that investors have for investing sustainably, but there are some broad-based themes which we're going to go through. What is clear is that many, many more people than we thought are interested in sustainable investing. Morgan Stanley did a study 2 years ago that asked investors a very simple question. Are you interested in sustainable investing? Over 70% of the individual investors polled said yes, they are interested. This is slightly higher for millennials and women, over 80%. But overall, the group that wanted to invest sustainably was over 75%. Morgan Stanley also asked financial advisors whether they were interested in offering sustainable investing. Over 60% of financial advisors said they had little or no interest in offering it. In fact, less than 20% said they were highly interested in offering sustainable investing. So let's take a look at that demand and supply picture for a second. Over 70% of investors are interested in sustainable investing. Less than 20% of financial advisors are highly interested in providing those services. There is an opportunity for financial advisors who want to offer it to clients. So why are these clients so interested in sustainable investing? First, we'll talk about them, and then we'll talk about some of the motivations for financial advisors as well. From a client perspective, there are, as I said before, multiple motivations for doing sustainable investing. We're going to run through a couple of them. One recurrent theme for many sustainable investors is that they want to be part of the solution instead of being part of the problem. Now, what does that actually mean? Well, to be blunt about it, we've been told, primarily by the environmentalists, for decades that we are the problem, right? They've told us to stop driving, stop flying, stop eating red meat, stop using single-use plastic, stop having kids. I mean, even stop breathing, right? You're creating CO2 when you breathe. So we all know that we're part of the problem. We're all creating our own carbon footprint and creating climate change just by existing on this planet. And so it's kind of we're tired of that message, right? We want to not be as much part of the problem. We want to be part of the solution wherever we can. Let me give you a personal example. Over the last 3 years, my family has had a plug-in hybrid car. This is the type of car where you plug it in the wall overnight, the battery charges up, the next day you get about 20 miles to drive around pure on the electric battery. And when that runs out, the engine kicks on and you start burning gas and you can drive another 300 miles. This is a great solution for us because most days we're just running around town, but we go on road trips and we have longer trips on occasion and we need the more range of the gas engine. But I found myself getting quite upset when that battery ran out and the gas engine came on. In fact, when the vibrations came up through this back seat, the kids would stop horse playing or messing with each other in the back seat, and they'd look up into the rearview mirror and they'd see, you know, kind of my Clint Eastwood twitch in my eyes as I'm tensing my shoulders and getting upset and gripping the steering wheel. And I had to ask myself, why am I getting so upset over just, you know, burning a couple of gallons of gasoline? It's not that expensive. And what it was is I was moving from being part of the solution to part of the problem. See, I have a contract with my utility provider to get 100% renewable energy driven electricity in my house. So when I charge the battery up in my car, I'm using renewable energy. So when I'm driving around spending that energy, I'm actually sending a signal to PG&E, my utility, and the power providers behind that, more renewable energy, please. I'm part of the solution. The minute that gas engine kicks in, I'm sending a signal to the gas companies, to the fossil fuel companies, to the oil exploration companies, drill, baby, drill, right? Now I'm part of the problem, right? Now, I know I'm part of the problem all the time. I'm never going to get completely off of fossil fuels in my life. I'm going to continue to fly in planes and, you know, use fossil fuels, but I don't want to use them when I don't have to. If I'm given a choice between being part of the solution and part of the problem, I'd rather be part of the solution more often. And that's why people are such fans of the electric cars. We now have a fully electric car that gets 300 miles of range. I don't have to go back and forth between being part of the problem and being part of the solution. I can be, at least when I'm driving, I can be part of the solution. Sustainable investing is kind of like that. People who have assets, who have money to invest, can put their money into sustainable investments, therefore signal to the marketplace that they prefer more sustainable companies, companies that are looking after people and planet, and their money is working for them all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365. That portfolio is still voting, still investing in those companies that are providing those solutions rather than the problems. Makes people feel good about their portfolios and about their investment advisor. Part and parcel of that motivation of being part of the solution instead of part of the problem is an increasing recognition by many more people that how they spend and how they invest their dollars is important. Now, it's no secret that a lot of people are disenchanted with the outcomes of their Democratic vote. And so they're searching for other ways to express themselves. And one way to do that is with their capitalist vote. They know that they can buy things from companies that share their values or are doing things that they believe are right. And they can avoid companies that they don't like their business practices or don't like the way they build their products and services. Similarly, they know that investing in certain ways will encourage capital flows to that type of company and away from other types of companies. And so that recognition that that power of the dollar, the voting your capital, is impactful, is increasingly more common among the individual investor. Another motivation for sustainable investors is what I like to call embracing the future. Capitalism is a tug of war, a continuing tug of war between the big companies who have been successful in the past making their products and services, and now they are the status quo. And in some cases, they retrench and they protect their vested interests by saying, these are the products we're going to continue to make profits from, these ways of doing things that we've always done. And on the other side, there's the disruptive innovators, the new startups, the new technologies, the substitutes that people are coming to. And we've seen this through all types of industries. You know, first there was IBM with a typewriter, and then Microsoft came in with a personal computer, and then Apple came in after them. You know, continuing disruptive, which is helpful and makes capitalism the dynamic force that it is, that produces all these excellent goods and services and outcomes for all of us. There's a sense of history here in the sustainability revolution. We had the Industrial Revolution. People are beginning to realize that whether we have to or whether it's just a better way of doing business, companies are going to have to start using less resources. They're going to have to start looking for more circular business models. They're going to have to start doing new things. It doesn't take much of a stretch of imagination to realize that the days of the gas-burning car are probably numbered. Maybe it's a distant time until electric cars take over. But you know, you can see how with battery prices dropping and the marginal costs of renewable energy being lower than the extractive fuels, it's almost not a question of if, but when that happens. And so investors don't want to invest in the old ways of doing things. They don't want to own typewriters and pagers and fax machines. You know, they want to own computers and mobile telephones. And that's just the nature of the way people think about things. And so if you can see a path where sustainability is going to become more important in our economy, those are the types of investors that want to invest this way. The last reason I'll talk about with regards to individual investors is not the last reason. It's just the one, there's many more. Just the last one I'm going to talk about is what I call the return in the revolution and the risk in the externality. And what this means is that many of these people see that tug of war between the old vested interests and the new disruptors as a risk and return story. Obviously, they don't want to own the typewriter manufacturer. They think that the new disruptive innovator of computer or autonomous vehicles or, you know, solar voltaic panels, whatever it is going to have higher returns. And they believe that those vested interests are going to be, that are protecting the old way of doing things, they're risky enterprises if their products aren't considered competitive anymore. Now, it's important as financial advisors to be fiduciaries and to be careful stewards of capital and not let the client run away with that idea and think that a portfolio of 100% renewable energy would be a well-diversified investment solution for them. But maybe tilting to sustainability through an ESG portfolio will get the client what they need in terms of that desire to embrace the future and avoid some of the old companies without betting the farm on it. Maybe that approach will get them what they need and get them a good investment experience as well. So, didn't cover all of the investor motivations by any stretch of the imagination, but let's turn to financial advisor motivations. There's basically two. We can break them down into two categories. One is the advisor who's just personally passionate about it, whether they concerned about climate change, or they've spent so much time in the financial services industry, they're excited about embracing a new, more inclusive and dynamic form of capitalism that takes that care of people and planet as well as profit. Whatever the particular passion might be, the financial advisor that is really passionate about this will probably have more success because they're coming from their heart and they're using their own personal stories to share them. So there's a set of motivations for the financial advisor that comes from the heart, which are very important. And if you are that type of person, I strongly encourage you to go ahead and embrace this. But there's other motivations for financial advisors that are more hard-nosed and practical, to be perfectly honest. It can be good business to offer sustainable investing to clients because, after all, it's what a lot of them want. So let's go through some of the motivations within those categories. So first and foremost, we should talk about why not, right? There are lots of reasons in the past to not do this. You're worried about underperformance. You're worried about of the funds that were SRI or ESG. You were worried about high costs of implementing those. There might not have been enough funds in the different asset classes that you use in your portfolio. So it was hard to build the portfolios. You didn't know how to talk about it. All of those problems have become alleviated with the new products that are available in all different types of asset classes at low cost that you can use to build sensible portfolios. So performance isn't as big as an issue as it was. And it's also not as niche as it was before. It's becoming more mainstream. As I said in the last podcast, when 7 of the 10 largest pension funds in the world are doing ESG investing, you're standing on pretty solid ground when you join with them in adopting this approach for your clients. Also, it doesn't carry the same stigma as it used to. You know, a few years ago, if you were suggesting any type of sustainability approach to anything, oh, people thought you might live in a cave, or you wear burlap, or you have to be a vegan, or you have to have a certain political outlook that they might not share. But that's not the case so much anymore. Well over half of the people in the United States now believe in climate change and think we should do something about it, for example. So that's across all walks of life, Republican, Democrat. It's more and more the case that this is something that's mainstream. So the reasons to not do it are fading away. So one of the things about sustainable investing in terms of adding it to your business practice is that many people consider the ESG version of sustainable investing to be the future. They don't think of it as a trend or a fad that's going to go away. It just makes sense to add these additional investment characteristics and risk and opportunity sets to the investment decision-making process. So some believe that all investing or most investing will incorporate ESG in the future. And in this sense, you have a chance to just get ahead of the curve. Okay, if it is the case that it's going to become more and more mainstream, here's a chance for some thought leadership. Perhaps you were a thought leader for your clients before by being one of the first to integrate a fee-based approach or use factor-based investments or apply tax management to investments. You could continue that thought leadership by introducing ESG, for example. There are also good business development opportunities with sustainable investing, which I will talk about in the next podcast. But suffice it to say that once you have a solution for a group of people that are passionate about something like sustainability, it's easy to find where those people are. They tend to hang out in groups. They tend to do the same things, whether it's fish or hunt or ski or garden. These are people who are concerned about similar things, and they're concerned about how the environment is affecting their passions. And so there's lots of niche and community marketing opportunities that open up for that. It's not just the people's passions that you can address. It's also types of people that you might want to get as investors, including millennials and women. The studies show that millennials, by a large, large percentage, want to find some purpose as well as profit in their investments. Similar with women, there are issues that they care about that they want to see reflected in their investments. By offering these, you're more likely to be able to attract those types of clients. This is also the case with regards to employees and recruitment in your business. If you're not hiring millennials and women, who are you hiring, right? So again, research shows that millennials want to find jobs that have a purpose as well as a paycheck. And so if you're offering this service, perhaps they'd be more willing to come work for you. And I'll close with what seems like a kind of a strong statement, but there is some research that bears this out. So the statement that I'm going to make is that it's possible to have a better business by offering sustainable investing because you might have better clients. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, there are two fields of inquiry that speak to that. One is there's actually quite a growing body of evidence that shows that Sustainable investors and socially responsible investors tend to be more disciplined with regards to investments. They have longer holding periods. They have stickier assets. They forgive periods of underperformance for longer. All other things being equal, if you had a group of clients who didn't need as much handholding, kept the discipline in down markets more so than others, that's a good thing for your business, right? So a socially responsible investor that is more disciplined and hangs on to their investments longer could be a better client for you, and you could have a more efficient business that way. The second field of inquiry that there's more and more research coming out on is about the type of client that refers other clients to your business. It turns out that loyalty and satisfaction are not enough. A loyal client doesn't refer much more than a regular client. A satisfied client doesn't refer much more than a regular client. It takes more than that. It takes a client to be engaged with your business, with your service. To the extent that a person passionate about sustainability, for example, might find your offering around sustainability, if they get excited about that, they might be more likely to get engaged with your service and then talk about it with their friends. And those are the types of clients that you want to have that will refer more of their friends and family to your business. So those are some of the reasons why financial advisors will want to consider offering sustainable investing as part of their service. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Sam Adams of Vert Asset Management. If you enjoyed this podcast, I highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website and access more investment planning resources. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.